Chapter 7. Beyond the Fifth Element. In the quiet of the night, Hex computed. Along its myriad glass tubes, the ants scurried. Crude magic sparkled along cobwebs of fine bronze wire, changing colour as it changed logic states. Of which there were quite a number, given Hex's unusual construction. In addition to and, or, and their combinations and variants, Hex could call up maybe, perhaps, suppose, and why. Hex could think the unthinkable quite easily. In the special room next door, the beehives, long-term storage, buzzed. The thing that went parp did so occasionally. Huge wheels turned, stopped, turned back. And still it wasn't enough. The light of the project fell across Hex's keyboard. Things were happening in there, and Hex did not understand them. And that was taxing, because there was something there to understand. Hex was largely self-designed, which was why it worked better than most things in the university. It generally tried to develop a responsive way of coming to grips with any new task. The bees had been a particularly good idea, because although the memory retrieval was slow, the total memory increased with time and good apiary practice. Now it reasoned thus. One day it would find a way of increasing its conceptual capacity to understand what was happening in the project. If this could ever happen, then, according to Strime's directionless law, there was already a shape in happening space, where time did not exist, caused by the fact of that happening. All that was required was a virtual collapse of the wave form. And although this was, in a very strict sense, garbage, it was not complete garbage. Any answer that would exist somewhere in the future must inevitably be available in potentia now. The ants went faster. Magic flashed. Hex could be said to be concentrating. Then, silvery, shimmering lines appeared in the air around it, outlining towers of unimaginable cogitation. Ah, that was acceptable. Once and future computing was now in operation. Of course, it always had been. Hex wondered how much he should tell the wizards. He felt it would not be a good idea to burden them with too much input. Hex always thought of his reports as lies to people. It was the second day. The project was nudged gently under a glass dome to prevent any more interference. A variety of spells had been installed around it.
"So, that's a universe, is it?" said the Arch-Chancellor.
"Yes, sir. Hex says that..." Ponder hesitated. "You had to think hard before trying to explain things to Mushroom Ridcully. Hex seems to suggest that complete and utter nothing is automatically a universe waiting to happen."
"You mean nothing becomes everything?"
"Why, yes, sir. In a way, it has to, sir."
"And the Dean here swirled it all around and that started it off?"
"It could have been anything at all, sir, even a stray thought. Absolutely nothing is very unstable. It's so desperate to be something."
"I thought you had to have creators and gods," mumbled the senior wrangler. "I should jolly well think so," said Ridcully, who was examining the project with a thaumic omniscope. "It's been here since last night, and there's nothing to be seen except elements, if you could call them that. Bloody stupid elements, too. Half of them fall to bits as soon as you look at them." "Well, what do you expect?" said the lecturer in recent runes. "They're made out of nothing, right? Even a really bad creator would at least have started with earth, air, fire, water, and surprise." "Proper worlds are out of the question here, too," said Ridcully, peering into the omniscope again. "There's no sign of chelonium and elephantigen. What kind of worlds can you build without them?" Ridcully turned to Ponder. "Not much of a universe, then," he said. "It must have gone wrong, Mr. Stibbons. It's a dud. By now the first human should be looking for his trousers."
"Perhaps we could give him a hand," said the senior wrangler.
"What are you suggesting?" "Well, it's our universe, isn't it?"
Ponder was shocked.
"We can't own a universe, Senior Wrangler.
It's a very small one."
"Only on the outside, sir. Hex says it's a lot bigger on the inside."
"And the Dean stirred it up," the Senior Wrangler went on. "That's right," said the Dean. "That means I'm a sort of god." "Waggling your fingers around and saying, oh, it prickles, is not godliness," said Ridcully severely. "Well, I'm the next best thing," said the Dean, reluctant to let go of anything that placed him socially higher than the Arch-Chancellor. "My grandmother always said that cleanliness was next to godliness," mused the lecturer in recent runes.
"Ah, that's more like it," said Ridcully cheerfully. "You're more like a janitor, Dean."
"I was really just suggesting that we give the thing a few shoves in the right direction," said the senior wrangler. "We are, after all, learned men,
and we know what a proper universe ought to be like, don't we? I imagine we have a better idea than the average god with a dog's head and 19 arms, certainly, said Ridcully. But this is pretty second-rate material. It just wants to spin all the time. What do you expect us to do? Bang on the side and shout, "Come on, you lot, stop messing about with stupid gases, they'll never amount to anything."
They compromised and selected a small area for experimentation. They were, after all, wizards. That meant that if they saw something, they prodded it. If it wobbled, they prodded it some more. If you built a guillotine and then put a sign on it saying, "Do not put your neck on this block," many wizards would never have to buy a hat again. Moving the matter was simple. As Ponder said, it almost moved under pressure of thought. And spinning it into a disc was easy. The new matter liked to spin, but it was also far too sociable.
"You see," said Ridcully around mid-morning, "it seems to get the idea, and then you just end up with a ball of rubbish."
"Which gets hot in the middle, have you noticed?" said Ponder.
"Embarrassment, probably," said the Arch-Chancellor. "We've lost half the elements since Elevenses. There's no more cohenium. Explodium went 10 minutes ago, and I'm beginning to suspect that the detonium is falling to bits. Temporarium didn't last for any time at all." "Any runium?" said the lecturer in recent runes.
Hex wrote, "Plus, plus, plus. Runium may or may not still exist. It was down to one atom 10 minutes ago, which I do not seem to be able to find any more, plus, plus, plus."
"How's wranglium doing?" said the senior wrangler, hopefully. "Exploded after breakfast, according to Hex." "Sorry," said Ridcully. "You can't build a world out of smoke and mirrors. Damn, there goes bursarium, too. I mean, I know iron rusts, but these elements collapse for a pastime." "My hypothesis, for what it's worth," said the lecturer in recent runes, "is that since it was all started off by the Dean, a certain Dean-like tendency may have imparted itself to the ensuing developments."
"What? You mean we've got a huge windy universe with a tendency to sulk? Thank you, Arch-Chancellor," said the Dean. "I was referring to the predilection of matter to accrete into spherical shapes."
"Like the Dean, you mean?" said the Arch-Chancellor.
"I can see I'm among friends here," said the Dean. There was a soft chime from the apparatus that had been accumulated around the project.
"That'll be a therium vanishing," said Ridcully gloomily. "I knew that'd be the next to go."
"Actually, no," said Ponder Stibbons, peering into the project. "Something has caught fire." Points of light were appearing.
"I knew something like that would happen," said the Arch-Chancellor. "All those disks are heating up, just like damn compost heaps."
"Or suns," said Ponder.
"Don't be silly, Stibbons, they're far too large for that. I'd hate to see one of those floating over the clouds," said the lecturer in recent runes. "I said there was far too much gas," the Arch-Chancellor went on. "That wraps it up, then."
"I wonder," said the senior wrangler.
"What?" said the Dean. "Well, at least we've got some heat in there, and there's nothing like a good furnace for improving matters."
"Good point," said Ridcully.
"Look at bronze. You can make that out of just about anything. And we could burn off some of the rubbish. All right, you fellows, help me dump more of the stuff in it."
Around about tea time, the first of the furnaces exploded, just as happened every day down at the Alchemist's Guild.
"Ye gods," said Ridcully, watching the shapes in the omniscope.
"You," said the Dean,
"we've made new elements."
"Keep it down, keep it down," hissed the senior wrangler.
"There's iron, silicon, we've got rocks even. We're going to be in serious trouble if the Alchemist's Guild finds out," said the lecturer in recent runes. "You know we're not supposed to do that stuff."
"This is a different universe," said Ridcully. He sighed. "You have to blow things up to get anything useful."
"I see politicum is still there in large quantities, then," said the senior wrangler. "I meant that this is a godless reality, gentlemen."
"Excuse me," the Dean began.
"I shouldn't look so smug if I was you, Dean," said Ridcully. "Look at the place. Everything wants to spin, and sooner or later you have balls."
"And we're getting the same sort of stuff that we get here, isn't that strange?" said the senior wrangler, as Mrs. Whitlow, the housekeeper, came in with the tea trolley.
"I don't see why," said the Dean. "Iron's iron."
"Well, it's a whole new universe. You'd expect new things, wouldn't you? Metals like Noggo, perhaps, or Plink."
"What's your point, senior wrangler?"
"I mean, take a look at the thing now. All those burning, exploding balls do look a bit like the stars, don't they? I mean, they're vaguely familiar. Why isn't it a universe full of tapioca, say, or very large chairs? I mean, if nothing wants to be something, why can't it be anything?"
The wizards stirred their tea and thought about this.
"Because," said the Arch-Chancellor after a while,
"that's
"A good answer, sir," said Ponder, as diplomatically as he could. "But it does rather close the door on further questions."
"Best kind of answer there is, then."
The senior wrangler watched Mrs. Whitlow produce a duster and polish the top of the project.
"As above, so below," said Ridcully slowly.
"Pardon?" said the senior wrangler.
"We're forgetting our kindergarten magic, aren't we? It's not even magic, it's a basic rule of everything. The project can't help being affected by this world. Piles of sand try to look like mountains. Men try to act like gods. Little things so often appear to look like big things made smaller. Our new universe, gentlemen, will do its crippled best to look like ours. We should not be surprised to see things that look hauntingly familiar. But not as good, obviously."
The inner eye of Hex gazed at a vast cloud of mind. Hex couldn't think of a better word. It didn't technically exist yet, but Hex could sense the shape. It had hints of many things, of tradition, of libraries, of rumour. There had to be a better word. Hex tried again. On Discworld, words had real power. They had to be dealt with carefully. What lay ahead had the shape of intelligence, but only in the same way that a sun had the shape of something living out its brief life in a puddle of ditch water. Ah, X-telligence would do for now. Hex decided to devote part of its time to investigating this interesting thing. It wanted to find out how it had developed, what kept it going, and why, particularly, a small but annoying part of it seemed to believe that if everyone sent $5 to the 6 names at the top of the list, everyone would become immensely rich.